kind of a weekend affair. We go down on Friday, and we're in Dallas on Saturday, Sunday, and then the conference starts on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, noon. So we do this at kind of a weekend event, trying to get to the run. Some of you know Dr. Well, everybody's a doctor anymore. Jeffries, he said Jeffries or something like that. He's on television here while we're in church on Channel 10, I think it is. So he's a very outspoken apologist for Christianity, tends to be a little political. Yes. I don't know if it's wrong politically, he just is. And Dallas is, used to have a lot of good churches, and now there are maybe a few. And he taught on the church, and it was excellent. Excellent. There was nothing I could disagree with. I mean, that's, for me, a critical listener, really pretty good. I mean, everything is right on target. So that isn't true for many churches. You have Swindoll's Church in Dallas, and you have another one, the Bible Church in Denton Bible Church. We've gone there, but it'd be a tough one for me to go there, although many people like it. So anyway, you find Jeffress, and his message was really good. It's a large church, an old church, 150 years old, and it continues to be a dispensational church. It's what Criswell was, and they've had a lot of other good guys that have come through the pulpit here. And they're downtown Dallas, multi-million dollar site, and they own a lot of property downtown. They have parking garages, what they rent out during the week. So, huge place. And the auditorium, you can see, is relatively empty. This is early in the second service. The second service is always the least attended, and you see in the balcony up here, I didn't give my arrows. It's empty yet, but it filled up pretty well, not full because of the COVID virus problem. We're with Tommy Ice and his wife Janice, and you see another couple back there from Wisconsin. Anyway, we kind of go as a group, and the choir is singing, and it was, the whole service for me was just a central overload because it was so loud. And the orchestra, everything was, high intensity. And anyway, I like a little more finesse. But so that was the weekend for the church service. Now, pre-trip, for those of you who don't know, pre-trip was started, a conference was started in 1991 with 37 invited guests. And Gil went in the early years. It wasn't 1991, but 92, 93. And it was a scholarly event where people were invited and presented papers, and you didn't have audiences and people that would look in and listen in. But that changed over the years. We started going in somewhere around 2003, somewhere in there. And then it was still kind of, you had the member and non-member restriction. And I remember I went as a, not as a member, as a guest. And pretty soon Tommy said, no, I made you a member. So I said, okay, the bar has been coming down now. So anyway, there's no membership distinction anymore. It's just generally a Bible conference with these papers being presented. So there were probably 200 this year attending. Wasn't the biggest, was the smallest, but as you look at it, it wasn't all that depreciated in the number of people that came. The banquet was at around 200, and that's kind of an evening event, and they said they have had as many as 500. But to have 500 in the banquet, you'd have to have a lot of walk-ons just from local Dallas area, which you could do that just for the evening. It's financially independent now. Tim LaHaye, of course, he's passed on. So it just runs on the voluntary support of people, and everybody works really without salary. And that's kind of the organization you like to have, because no one's trying to do anything for money because there's none to be had. And it was organized to present the defense of the pre-trib, defense of pre-trib rapture of the church. And, we have the other side of the stream is a covenantal view, and it has gained momentum and is getting a lot more attention, especially in these last 20 years, than it ought to get. So the defense of pre-tribulation rapture is really an important function, because I don't know of anybody else that's doing this in the way that it's getting the attention it's getting. So papers are written, and these are published a lot of times. Books are published, articles are written, conferences are had. And so the pre-tribulation rapture view of the church is becoming, it's the pre-trib's objective is to keep it in the public eye. So there's been great help from these writers over the last 30 years. Next year will be the 30th year. And a real thing that I think has been significant to me is that before Darby 19 1830, somewhere in there, John Nelson Darby, who supposedly formulated dispensationalism, and that's probably somewhat true, has proved that he did not invent the ideas of dispensationalism. William Watson, by the way, who is deceased. He was a conference speaker, and before he could be there, he died. One of those kind of unfortunates, as far as we're concerned. So William Watson provided a landmark study on the issue, and we have his book if you want to buy it. It's kind of about that big, which showed that dispensation is not new at all, and it's been around. Ideas of dispensationalism have been around for, well, he picked it up from the Reformation period. And so it pretty well silenced all those that said that dispensationalism was an idea that came from a 16-year-old girl who was in her trance, and John Nelson Darby picked it up from her, and that story continues to be told and told and told, you know, like it is with fake news. So this should shut that down, and probably to some extent for anybody's thinking does, because the ideas of rapture, tribulation, these kind of the weeks of Daniel, so forth, they were talked about before Darby. They didn't have it put together quite as nicely as Darby did, but they were there before. So dispensationalism really is not the new thing at all. It's the covenant theology that's new, which arose in the 17th centuries. There's just a picture of the room idea. I counted there probably around 200 people possibly there. And let me see here. I talked about the literature. This is just one table from Moody Publishers, who do a lot of publishing. There are other publishers as well, so you can see there are a lot of books. And by the way, the stuff that Twyla has generally is dispensational material. So Pete, and she's always got new books that are being put up there, and I'm going to recommend or show you another book that is going to be up there if she doesn't already have it. So these books are being written as we speak, and they come online, and they do have an impact on people because they're just in the intellectual mind of the people that are interested. Just conference attendees. What's the name of the Job Martin? He has a series of kids' videos of science. I mean, what that's called? I was going to look it up, and I couldn't. I know we have some at home, and I couldn't remember. Anyway, that's he and his daughter. They have two daughters that are with them. They're not married, so I say Miss Martin. So, and they don't plan to marry. They had their opportunities, he said, but they decided not to marry. That's fine. And so they're in ministry. Randall Price, of course, many of you know. And I had to throw Kathleen Schmidt in there on the side, because if any of you are golfers, her husband was the one that invented the Big Bertha golf club. And that made him wealthy. And he's died about 20 years ago. So she's a great supporter of the pre-trib. I'm not financially, but just her person. So she's always there, interestingly, as a widow. Tommy Ice, the chairman, the arrow in the back. I didn't get a better picture of him. And you have Robbie Dean. He also writes a lot of stuff in the black hat. Erwin Lutzer sitting, signing autographs of this book. By the way, this is his book. Randall Price and a guy named Lee. I think he's a Calvary Chapel. And then the wife of Erwin Lutzer sitting at the banquet table. And Charles Clough. Some of you maybe don't know him, but he's my hero in terms of a teacher if anybody's interested in deeper, in-depth is not the right word either, detail maybe, more detailed view of the world from a biblical point of view, from a philosophical point of view, which means that you put all the pieces together and present a picture, that's a philosophical view. Charles Clough does it, and his stuff is free. And if anybody you want, talk to me later, and I will get you lined up. I've got even stuff that I can give you. So anyway, he's my hero, and he was there again giving his stuff away. All right. So our girls all went this year for the first time. Kim was going to go, and then all of a sudden they got the invitation to sing there, and I said, wow, that's interesting. So they did the entertainment of the evening. The guest speaker was Erwin Lutzer from Moody Bible Church, Moody Church in Chicago. He was the guest speaker. He is now the pastor emeritus of Moody Church. He was there 35, 36 years, and he's younger than I am, and he must be about Gil's age. Author, speaker, and he has this book, We Will Not Be Silenced. That's where I got the idea of this, sir, and We Will Not Be Silenced, too. All right. So, according to David Horowitz, in the book now, Alinsky, Al Alinsky, Ruth Radicals would ask community organizers why they are joining him. They would say, well, to help the poor and the oppressed. And Alinsky would scream, no, you want to organize for power. So Alinsky, this is something you, this is kind of a cultural thing that's going on today. The people that should be helped, let's say Chicago, the black communities in Chicago, the oppressed area in Chicago, Alinsky said, no, you do not want to organize, you do not want to help those people. You want to use those people for power. And that's the story. And you have people that, you say, why don't they help those people? Well, they don't want to help them, okay? So, no, you want to organize for power in this book in 1971. Alinsky, an organizer, must stir up, he said, an organizer must stir up dissatisfaction and discontent. He must create a mechanism that can drain off the underlying guilt for having accepted the previous situation for so long a time. By the way, white people are doing that. Out of this mechanism, a community organization arises. So that's what he would say. And that's the way you do this. So we have repeated the phrase, the issue at hand is not the issue. The issue is the revolution. Well, Alinsky put that in shoe leather when he suggested that helping the poor in Chicago is not the issue. Give up on that. Because the bigger issue is the revolution, and the bigger revolution is the overthrow of Christianity. It's not said, but when you see capitalism or anything in the West, it's always meaning Christianity. And it's interesting to me, I'm not anti-Semitic, but a lot of these people that on this on the left side, this goes back as far as 100 years, even into Marxism, these people that are promoting this off-color message are Jewish people. And it struck me that week when I thought about this, well, they're Jewish people, and they're just trying to destroy Christianity. Well, that makes total sense to them, because Christianity is the offbeat for them, so they must destroy it. Now, they're not wanting, these Jewish people are not wanting the world to go back to Judaism. No, they're atheists. They're agnostic. They don't want to go back to the Bible at all. They just want to go back to nothing. And out of this nothing, something will come. So, anyway, this is kind of just out of his book. So here's Lutzer.
Confusing, bewildering, and perplexing hour of history. All of our leaders agree that the world seems to be plunging headlong toward disaster. However, this evening it is our privilege to be here in Dallas, the gateway to the great Southwest. We have been impressed with its beautiful banks, offices, hospitals, and factories, which form a striking picture against the evening sky. In a moment, I'm going to ask you to come, hundreds of you. You simply get out of your seats, and I want you to come. And for those of you who have joined us tonight by television, we'd like to send you some literature. We'd like to send you a book that has been a blessing to tens of thousands of people around the world, written by Pastor Lutzer. Just write to me, Billy Graham, Minneapolis, Minnesota. That's all the address you need, just Billy Graham, Minneapolis, Minnesota. Now until the same time next week, goodbye, and may the Lord bless you real good.
Well, anyway, he does imitation of a lot of voices. He did that one of Billy Graham, which I thought was kind of funny. And that was obviously Billy Graham. So we are in uncharted times, and this is sort of a thing I've been thinking about. Has there ever been a Christian nation, ever been a nation that was established as a Christian nation outside of America? The answer is no. And so now we have, for the first time, that Christian nation, you know what I'm saying, Christian nation, it uses Christian principles, I don't mean they're all saved, all right? So that Christian nation is now being under attack. So this is the first time we could ever say in all of history, it seems to me like this situation, these uncharted times are. Because nowhere else, even in Europe or in South America or in Europe or I mean Africa or in the Far East, has there ever been a nation that's been chartered as a Christian nation. And now we find this is the very nation, I'd say to the glory of God, and this is the nation that's being under attack by the left so violently. So it seems like we are in a time when the rapture could occur. I mean, I always think Lot, and he was rescued by the angel. And so I think that at a certain point of time when it's bad enough, I don't know what that is, but we will be rescued. And we will depart from here, and then those that want to have it their way will have the opportunity to have it their way. So in the meantime, we have this progressive left is actually gaining momentum, it seems like. You just can't turn on the radio without some, you know, somebody's speech being stifled or some freedoms are being denied. And those things that we believe are part of what makes our life good are all being destroyed or being attacked. And one of the techniques is to shame us into silence because all the past sins that we've occurred, and I don't accept that, but for some people it is acceptable. So this whole idea of racism has been used against us or against America, and they have said that America is the least racist country in the whole world, yet they continue to repeat that mantra. So the Lord's return is imminent, I say more than ever before, which is kind of funny. So there was a calm about the virus. There were some exceptions there, but most people came and wore their mask and hung from one ear. But, you know, they were fine. And we were the only conference in the hotel. In fact, we were the first conference in the hotel, I don't know for how long, because they all been canceled. So in some sense, the Christians were the first one to step out and venture into the no man's land of the virus. So a lot of people had it. You know, they talked about it, but no one was really panicky about it. But there were some exceptions, probably because some people maybe didn't think that they could risk it because of their health or whatever. So as a group, you wouldn't see that there was anything different except we wore masks. So in the group, there's a diversity, obviously, in the group because of the things that we believe. Anything's pretty well permitted in the group except that's permitted within literalism. I mean, so you can have covenantalists there. You could probably have the anti-lordship people there, and they're probably too highly numbered represented. But one thing you didn't have there was a covenantalist. Now, one covenantalist, I mean, if they were there, they were quiet. And there were no presenters that would present the covenantal point of view. And the thing that was encouraging to me, we had a lot of some younger writers. I mean, we're talking about in the 40s rather than in the 70s. Younger writers, leaders are emerging to replace the aging leadership. Remember now, this has been going on for 30 years. And the founder of it already is dead. Dr. Tim LaHaye and other people like Charles Riley have died, and Whitcomb died this last year. So some of these older guys that we've hung on to, so to speak, have died off, and now we need a younger group. And I was encouraged to see by some of the papers that they are coming up. So we'll just run through some of these papers. I don't know how interested you are in this, but or how much time I have even to do this, but this kind of order, I said best papers, I left out one or two. Not that they weren't any good, but I just thought these were the most significant to me. This Tim Chafee, I think is how you say his name. He's a guy from Answers in Genesis. He writes the if you go to Noah's Ark and read the little labels on all the, you know, displays, well, he's the guy that writes those. And he has a paper on the Nephilim. This is a Genesis chapter 6 question. Are these angels? Are these demons and so forth? And everybody's got their view on of that, and he has his view, and that, to me, it's not very important about the pre-trib thing, but he was there, and he's 6'9", I think it is. So there was another guy, Andy Wood, he's 6'6", or something like that, and Andy Wood says, this is the first time I've come to a conference where somebody's taller than me. So he's a real tall guy. All right, so he's from Answers to Genesis. Then we have George Gunn. He did a paper on the Bethel Church. This is the New Apostolic Ministry. And we may not know Bethel Church, but we do know some of their music, and we have sung some of their music, and it's a weird group. I mean, they believe that they can absorb the spirits of the dead by laying on their tombs. Ah. Anyway, yeah, right. So George Gunn is the vice president, and by the way, he's in Shasta, California, and that's where Bethel Church is. So I don't spend more time on these things than I just to be, briefly mention them. Polishing the Brass on a Sinking Ship. This is a new fellow from Southern Baptist, the Southwestern Baptist in Fort Worth. And I really liked this paper. And it was on the church, the duty of the church and the duty of the individual. And when he taught it, I said, that's exactly what I taught. I mean, in the way I taught it. You know, where you have the church never speaks to the world. The church always speaks to the inside. It never speaks to the outside. But the individuals go out with a message into the world. And he hammered that. I said, that is exactly right. So we don't have to worry about, well, should the church be involved? Well, the church is involved in those individuals that are out there. And the church doesn't follow those individuals out to tell them what to do. They're free moral agents, do what they want to do. you know, elders to say, well, are you doing the right thing? You know, unless they're sinning. But you're free to do your own thing. And that's how I've taught it. And therefore, they don't look to the church to make statements proclamations of something in a political event. That's left up to the individual. So and then that was his point, and I thought it was right on. Then we have Corey Marsh, who's one of these young guys. He's from the Southern California Seminary, which is the seminary that Tim LaHaye formed in San Diego. And from this seminary, and it's a dispensational seminary, which is great, some of these younger guys are coming, and they have joined together and produced this book that he read a chapter from, Discovering Dispensationalism. Anyway, Professor, that was really good. And let's see here, Fazio, same place, Discovering Dispensationalism. They have three chapters in a book that's coming out that they gave to the group. Now, Fazio, I was really kind of excited because he's going to define dispensationalism for us. I thought, boy, that's good. So he goes through a lot of explanation of what a dispensation is in the Bible, and I thought it was all great. So he comes up at the end with this definition. As a dispensation is an administration of a household, whereby a steward is appointed to manage his master's goods in order to yield a surplus, for which he will ultimately be judged according to his faithfulness as a steward. And I thought, okay, I'm not happy yet. I mean, to me, that doesn't, this describes a dispensation, but does not describe dispensationalism. So you put a capital D or a small d. This is small d. I said, the covenant people can agree to this. That doesn't distinguish from us from the covenantal people, and we need to be distinguished. So I've thought about this, and I've given you the three sine qua non issues in dispensationalism. That is, read the Bible literally, separate Israel and the church, and give God the glory. God gets glory for everything he does, not just save people. But I thought, you know, we can really reduce that down to one phrase, which I have here for you, because I don't think that he defines dispensationalism with a big D. He doesn't actually put a big D on that. Which is that we read our Bibles for its literal sense. That's dispensationalism. Now, if you can do better than that, or fewer words, that's good. But I think that's it. We read our Bible for its literal sense. Everybody else doesn't. And when you read your Bible for literal sense, you'll find that Israel and the church are separate. God gets glory for everything he does. We read our Bible, but historically and grammatically. So that's my definition. We read the Bible for its literal sense. That's dispensationalism. And we find the covenantal people would disagree with that because they don't read it for the literal sense. All right, so much of that. I feel better now. Then we have Mark Hitchcock. We've known him. He's been here a couple of times. He wrote a book on the coronavirus and went through that, which, you know, kind of boring, but the way it is today. And we have Babylon in Prophecy by Andy Woods. He's the other tall guy, senior pastor of Sugarland Bible Church, I think in Houston. And he's the president of Schaefer Theological Seminary. He's one of these guys that are the anti-lordship guys on that side, the Zane Hodges and stuff like that. But he's a good guy in terms of his scholarship, and he stays off that subject. And by the way, those subjects don't come up in pre-trib. I mean, they may come up, you know, inappropriately, but they don't really come up as an issue. So you can learn a lot from him. I really enjoyed his paper on Babylon. And by the way, these papers will eventually be online. They're not online yet, but they will eventually someday. So he says in Babylon, this is, you know, the issue of Babylon, woman rides the beast. The question is Babylon a real place or is it just a metaphorical place? There's your choice. Is it a real place or is it a metaphorical? And he argues it's a real place. It will be rebuilt. And the other thing is that the woman that rides the beast is often considered the Roman Catholic Church. He doesn't totally disagree with that, but he probably enlarges it, and I agree with him. I thought what he said about the woman riding the beast was good, because I don't think that the Roman Catholic Church as such, I go different here again, is the real leader here, because I think there's something bigger than the Roman Catholic Church that will unify the world, and that's the world of Gaia, the worship of the earth. And the Catholic Church will fit really well into that, as well as all the Eastern mystical religions. And so anyway, that's why I think the woman actually becomes that mystery religion, but it's not the Catholic Church as such. And therefore, it's not attached to Rome, which it often is. So he makes a separation. So I liked it. So what he says about Babylon is it's destined to play a monumental role in God's end-time prophetic program. Human history will eventually recycle back to where it all began, in the very geographical area where humanity first engaged in a collective rebellion against God, which is the Tower of Babel. The Antichrist will attempt the same feat. Such a literal interpretation of these chapters harmonizes well with the predictions of the pre-exilic and post-exilic, into Babylon prophets. This view also makes good sense of the events surrounding the sixth trumpet and the sixth bowl judgments. Alternative interpretations of Revelation 17 and 18 leave more unanswered questions than they do solutions. Although the literal Babylon view is not based on a newspaper reading of the Bible, it does harmonize well with current events that seem to be pushing humanity in the direction of a world capital in modern-day Babylon. Now remember, we have, the way I teach this, and others teach it this way too, between the rapture of the church and the beginning of the tribulation, there's some space. In fact, I think it was Larkin, who goes back to 1919 time, I think he said, talk about 40, 50, 60 years between these two events. So in this time, a lot of things can happen that we can't see at all happen. And so we just want to say, well, I can't see how that could be happening. You go into all the arguments, how quickly Dubai was built and how quickly the Chicago was rebuilt after the fire, all these kind of things. This can be done in a really quick time. But we don't need very quick time, like 2 or 3 years. It could be as much as 10 or 20 years. I don't know. I'm not ready to put my toe into that water yet. But I know there's space between it. There has to be. So, for that matter, thanks for your prayers and your interest. And if you have questions, let's do them.